You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
I'm talking to you in an office that's normally buzzing with reporters from 10 different desks here at the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong. Over the Lunar New Year holiday, it normally gets fairly quiet in here, but over the past week, one desk in particular has been powering through the public holiday. I'm talking about my colleagues on the China desk here at the SCMP, who have been covering what is one of the biggest health crises in China since the outbreak of SARS in 2003. And while many of them live here in Hong Kong, there are many others in our team who are either based in mainland China or who have spent the Lunar New Year holiday visiting friends and family there. In this podcast, we're going to give you an insight into what it has been like for the past week for our journalists covering the Wuhan coronavirus. This is not a podcast about how the virus got started, or how it spread, or how it's being controlled. That's a developing story which you can keep updated by reading smp.com. This is a podcast that will give you an insight into what it's like for journalists covering this story, caught up in what has now become known as the Wuhan coronavirus. Welcome to a special edition of the Inside China podcast. My name is Finbar Birmingham. I work on the political economy desk here at the South China Morning Post and usually present a weekly podcast about the US-China trade war. Here in the office, the clusters of protective helmets and respirators being used by reporters and video team to cover the protests here in Hong Kong have been moved. And in their place are boxes of surgical masks and big bottles of alcohol-based hand sanitizer. All the doors in the newsroom now have small signs stating how regularly the handles are decontaminated. And 18 floors below us in the busy Causeway Bay shopping precinct, it's very quiet indeed. Today in Hong Kong, the government has announced that it will restrict travel over the border from China. And it's also announced that it will close all public venues, libraries, galleries, beaches, golf clubs, tennis courts, performance venues, and football fields. They're all being closed in an effort to prevent any further spread of the coronavirus. You may recognize a couple of the voices on this podcast from other editions of Inside China. Mimi Lau and Laurie Chen have both presented different editions. We'll also hear from other SCMP journalists about what it has been like to cover this Wuhan coronavirus crisis. I am joined by China Desk reporter and editor Mimi Lau and Teddy Ng to discuss the work that they've been doing over the Lunar New Year holiday, covering this massive story out of the SCMP's offices here in Causeway Bay in Hong Kong. Teddy, I'll start with you. You were manning the desk over the Lunar New Year holiday. You didn't get any break. I know that for a fact. And this really grew arms and legs over the weekend to become possibly the biggest news story in the world. Give us an idea as to how this thing escalated over the New Year holiday.
Well, I think things, at least inside mainland China, has been escalating since last week, especially after the Wuhan government announced that it locked down the city, banning traffic and travel there. People on mainland are technically still on holiday because they do not have to go back to work because of this Chinese New Year. But I can say that the whole Lunar New Year holiday is ruined because of this, you know, outbreak crisis. And people do not have a holiday mood. What they do is to go into supermarket to stockpile daily necessities for everything ranging from face masks to disinfectants. Yeah, so
rice and water flying off the shelves as well.
Yeah, and food and everything they need, I mean, in the times of crisis. Yeah.
Mm. And that's a real jarring contrast with what usually happens over the Lunar New Year holiday. There were no firework displays, all public events and public gatherings were cancelled, so you didn't have families strolling in the streets as you usually do at this very important time of year in China.
Yeah, actually some people did cancel their, you know, family reunion and gathering. I mean, it's a custom during the Chinese New Year for people to go out to see their relatives and friends, but they are not during this year because of the outbreak, there was no public gatherings, no celebrations, no like any other kind of activities, and you even cannot go to the next village because of these, you know, travel ban.
And this is something which is going to continue because we've had the government in Beijing extend the holiday period. Unprecedented step. The holiday period has been extended by a few days. Markets are going to be closed into next week. In Hong Kong, as I mentioned at the top of this segment, we had the government today saying that all the facilities will be closed. And we've also been hearing that civil servants will work from home for at least 2 weeks in Hong Kong. So that's a sense of the gravity of the situation here. Mimi, you have been writing some really fantastic stories on the topic. One in particular over the weekend about the desperate scenes at the epicenter of the crisis in Wuhan. This is a place where hospitals have been overrun and where public facilities have been stretched to the absolute limit. Give us the gist of your story.
I've spoken to quite a number of people in Wuhan trying to look for treatment, a hospital bed, and diagnosis. People who have been isolated, people who have been lost in the city with no transportation. But one story particularly struck me is this interview with a 36-year-old nurse. She doesn't really work in that hospital she was in when I spoke to her that day, but rather she had to... It was a place where she ended up with her husband, who has been having a fever for over 10 days. They went around from hospital to hospitals. Even CT scans have shown her husband has been infected with a virus pneumonia. But no hospital would give her a diagnosis. No hospital would offer a bed. Even ambulances turned her away soon as they learned her husband was feverish. They had to leave the 6-year-old daughter at home and elderly in-laws. They went from hostel to hostels until the city entered a lockdown. They were stuck with that last hospital. So they were in this emergency ward trying to get a place.
So these poor people, husband is feverish and the wife is a nurse, and they're going from medical ward to medical ward trying to find a bed, trying to get a diagnosis of the coronavirus for the husband, right? There was a video that this woman took on social, she posted it on social media, caused quite a stir on the internet. And it showed lots of people waiting for treatment in hospital waiting rooms, as well as what appeared to be dead bodies wrapped in sheets lining the floors of the ward. Incredibly, Mimi, you managed to reach out to this person and you interviewed her. Tell us how that came about and tell us what she had to say. What was her frame of mind when you spoke with her?
I spoke to that woman on the phone and she was in a desperate situation trying to get the medical treatment for her and her husband. She suspected she was sick as well. So I asked her what was this like in the ward, and she told me, "You saw the videos I put online." She said she filmed a video that morning when she came into the ward and see her husband, where there were bodies lying there, unattended. She even saw a nurse trying to call people to take the bodies away, but to no avail. And she even saw that nurse melting down in tears, and she ended up handing her tissues, paper.
And what was her motivation? Why did she post it on social media?
She was trying to get attention for this desperate situation she and her husband were in. She was trying to do everything in her capacity as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter, trying to get medical treatment.
Just absolute desperation, Mimi, right?
Absolutely. So what struck me the most is that being diagnosed with coronavirus in Wuhan at that point was not the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario was something that she was facing, that is being trapped in medical limbo waiting for diagnosis. So that so I saw that video on Weibo and I reached out to her and she responded. I called her immediately for a phone interview. Within a few minutes into the interview, she was already sobbing in desperation, saying, "I've got nothing on, no isolation gear, just a raincoat. I'm standing outside a hospital in the rain." Everyone who's wandering on the streets of Wuhan are pretty much patients waiting for a diagnosis. So that kind of haunting scene just really stuck in my head. And
this story really kind of exploded on our website, and I know that it also gained a very strong reaction on social media, Mimi. What sort of response did you get from viewers and from readers?
Got a huge response on Twitter, and it's still going on. People are concerned about this woman's well-being, and we try to follow up the story. And she could not be reached afterwards. Her account was deleted. I wish her all the best. Hopefully she can get the treatment her and her husband needed.
But this is something which really captured the imagination.
This really captured people's attention over what is happening in Wuhan right now.
It was really an illustration, a very human side of what's going on with all the numbers that we hear. And, you know, the city of Wuhan, 11 million people, is on lockdown. No people can leave or can enter the city. Since it went on lockdown late last week, Teddy, surrounding area has also been put in the same situation. The surrounding cities and the Hubei provinces, as I understand, is almost all under lockdown. Can you give us an idea of the scale of this? This is not a small area. This is a huge chunk of land and a huge amount of people who can't leave or enter this area.
Yes. First, the lockdown happened in Wuhan, which has 11 million people. But then it's kind of, you know, expanding to like at least 13 other cities in Hubei province. So we can say that the whole province has been locked down. And then in other parts of China, like Beijing, or, you know, Guangdong has, you know, some kind of, you know, partial traffic restrictions. And not only, inside mainland China, the Chinese authorities are also, you know, discouraging people to go overseas. So we have these travel agencies suspending the sales of flights and hotel accommodation packages.
Yeah. Unprecedented, as we said before. Teddy, you worked in Hong Kong as a journalist for a different publication in 2003 when SARS epidemic happened in Hong Kong. And, you know, living here for some years, you know, the scars of that are still visible. It's still a very fresh memory for many people. And we'd like to hear some of your own memories. What was it like to work here as a journalist during SARS? And how does the situation compare with the way in which the coronavirus epidemic has unfolded?
Well, I think the memory of SARS is still very new to a lot of Hong Kong people, even though it happened 17 years ago. Remember that more than 1,700 people in Hong Kong got infected, and nearly 300 of them were killed, including some medical professions. So people are very frightened when they heard that a SARS-like virus, is spreading across China and then further to overseas. As soon as they hear the news, people are very worried, and they, you know, start, buying face masks and disinfectants.
Flying off the shelves, and we've all seen people wandering the streets of Hong Kong with big shopping bags full of supplies. In mainland China, lots of footage of shops which are short of food and water.
Yeah, and Hong Kong people are very alerted, and they expect the Hong Kong government to come up with some, you know, quick response to, you know, stop the spreading of the virus, like closing the border between Hong Kong and mainland, putting more resources to hospital. The Hong Kong public hospital and public medical system is already overwhelmed with, you know, a lot of other problems, and the medical professionals are questioning whether they can cope with another outbreak.
Yeah, very worrying times. There are people across China and Hong Kong as well who are very frustrated and very angered by what they deem to be an insufficient response from both governments to this growing crisis. Give us an idea of how these people are reacting.
Many people, you know, inside mainland China are very frustrated nowadays. They're blaming especially the Wuhan government for not acting quick enough to contain the spread of the virus. Because we have the first patients with onset of symptoms on December 1st, But then it really took a long time for the government to release information about this outbreak. And people are questioning the government if this information disclosure is done earlier. People are also questioning, should there be a long-term permanent nationwide ban on wildlife animal trading? Mm-hmm. We already had a painful lesson 17 years ago, in SARS, which is also triggered by, the trading and eating of these wildlife animals. And people do not want to repeat the same tragedy again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. Mimi, you have very kindly come in here on your day off to record the podcast. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're going to be keeping on top of this, and I understand that you're in touch with people from all over China who are feeding you information and giving you snapshots of what's happening on the ground.
Yeah, people are still trying to reach me, telling me how they are going out of their ways to get a diagnosis, how they are going to, how they fare basically in this ongoing epidemic.
Course coverage continues on SMP.com. Thank you, Teddy. Thank you, Mimi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm joined by Laurie Chen, a reporter on the China desk here at the South China Morning Post. Laurie, you've been reporting over the Lunar New Year holiday about how the coronavirus outbreak has been covered online, on social media and so on. And in a situation like this, the sheer volume of information and misinformation being shared on social media can be really unhelpful. Laurie, what's the main myths and false information which you've seen being shared on social media over the past few days?
Obviously, there's been a lot shared on both mainland social media, which is heavily monitored and controlled by the Chinese government, and also Western social media as well, as the virus has gained traction overseas. So one of the biggest pieces of misinformation circulating both in China and outside of China is that the virus came from eating bats. So scientists have speculated that the likely source of the coronavirus may be in bats, which are the natural hosts of several types of coronavirus. And recently, a video of a Chinese travel show host went viral online, and it shows her, it's quite a gross video of her eating a bat in soup, and lots of close-ups of sort of dead bats' faces and stuff. Obviously, this very short clip actually was filmed 3 years ago in Palau in Indonesia, and people kind of seized on that clip first in China and then outside China and blamed the outbreak on that and people eating bats. But actually, you can't get the coronavirus from eating cooked meat unless it's been contaminated by raw meat, according to experts. And it's very likely that the coronavirus was transmitted to humans by another animal when it jumped from bats to another animal. Mm-hmm. So that's probably been the biggest piece of misinformation. And that's been used as an excuse to sort of demonize Chinese people by people in the West, these crazy bat eaters, they're disgusting, can't even control their appetites, blah, blah, blah. It's a target of a lot of like racist tropes against Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, one of the common replies you see on, to news stories or comments on Twitter is, well, you should stop eating such crazy food and you wouldn't have such an illness in your country. I mean, it's a horrible trend. There's also been a lot of tattle flying around the internet about how this illness or how this virus can or cannot be cured. Mm. What's the actual reality of that, Laurie?
No specific cure has been found yet, and it takes a while to develop vaccines, even though like teams of scientists are on the job already and trying to kind of figure out a cure. These things take time, and also the virus might still mutate, so finding a cure is obviously going to be quite difficult and time-consuming. But some Chinese people have been circulating online in chat groups on WeChat and Weibo that apparently if you mix smoked vinegar, which is a traditional Chinese ingredient, with banlangan, which is like a type of herb used in Chinese medicine, then that can cure some symptoms of the virus. But that is not true.
Yeah, and I guess it's not helpful for these false cures to be doing the rounds on the internet. I remember being a student back in Brighton in the UK around the time of the swine flu epidemic. I don't know if you remember that, Laurie. But the UK government expedited the journey of Tamiflu, which was supposed to be the cure. They spent billions of pounds getting this thing, bypassing all the stages of testing and, getting it distributed through the network of pharmacies, only to find out years later that it was completely useless. So, I mean, aside from the social media chatter about this, I guess it's important that the authorities don't rush through any supposed cures that perhaps don't do the job that they're supposed to. Back to the issue at hand, though, you know, working as a journalist in this day and age, it can often be a challenge to disseminate the real information and the real pictures and videos from the false ones, which are so prominent and prevalent on social media. That has been the case again with this, you know, the outbreak. There's been lots of videos pretending to be from like Wuhan contemporaneously, and they're clearly not. I mean, how do you address that challenge in your job?
Yeah, that is admittedly really difficult. But actually, there are a lot of sort of, you know, good-natured volunteers out there who are willing to verify the information. And if you kind of cross-check it with a number of different sources, then and also residents living there as well, then that usually helps. But yeah, it is just fighting a constant battle.
Yeah, and it's not just on this case, of course. It seems to be on every big news story in this day and age. I think one thing that's been really noticeable over the past week or so is the scale and the nature of some of these conspiracy theories or myths on both Chinese media, such as Weibo or WeChat, and also international media like Facebook and Twitter. Laurie, give us a few highlights of those stories, those rumours that you've seen online.
Yeah, so there have been actually some overlaps in these rumours between Western and Chinese social media. So with both sides claiming that it's, you know, a bioweapon, obviously with the Western conspiracy theorists thinking that it's some kind of bioweapon that China is trying to send to the whole world. And in China, people have found some kind of way to blame it on America, and seeing it's a sort of US bioweapon that's, you know, trying to hurt China in some unpatriotic way. But in China, like, a lot of these extremely sort of far out rumors are mostly squashed by the government. They don't really kind of, they don't have the same reach as some of these rumors do in the West. So so in sort of Western social media, a lot of like far right extremist online groups and Facebook groups such as QAnon have been spreading rumors that involve the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and also, British tabloids as well reported that the coronavirus outbreak was linked to like a secret biosafety lab that was opened in Wuhan. And they've claimed that it was actually created in this laboratory and sort of spread to the world, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, these are very dangerous and very irresponsible stories to be run, not just on social media, but as you said, some of the British tabloids. Maybe we shouldn't be so surprised that they're running them, but very dangerous nonetheless. And Laurie, life on the streets in Hong Kong, how have you noticed a change over the past week? Certainly I have, since the beginning of the Lunar New Year holiday, noticed a real change in the mood here, from people, probably myself included, being a little bit blasé to then, you know, definitely wearing a mask wherever you go, and, you know, the sanitation has stepped up another notch or two as well. But what's been your own experience when you step out for a coffee or walk to work in the morning?
So I live in Wan Chai, which is one of the densest parts of Hong Kong Island. It's near the downtown financial centre, and it has like a very kind of big sort of expat and local population. During my walk to work this morning, I saw a queue that stretched around the block for our local pharmacy before it had even opened. So maybe these people thought that they might get a new shipment of masks or something that was going to be sold in the pharmacy. It was quite crazy. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And besides from that, the streets are always fairly empty. You get dirty looks if you even dare step outside your front door without a face mask on. And there's an edge to people, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, everybody that I know seems to be texting around friends and family outside of Hong Kong saying, can you get any masks? Is there any chance you could ship them over to me? But even my relatives in Australia have been able to locate any. So it's not just a Hong Kong problem. Laurie, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Inside China podcast from the South China Morning Post. For further updates on the Wuhan coronavirus, stay tuned to scmp.com.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.